to the dinim of kashrus. Doesn't give all the dinim. Boston Mechobel is not here. Here's most of the dinim of kashrus, and the Torah lists off the non-kosher birds. And the Torah gives you the klolim for the fish and the klolim for the behema v'chaya. To determine whether any given fish is kosher or non-kosher, the Chumash says it depends on knapa v'kaskeses, and that's it. And the Rosh and the Tshuva writes that there's no need for any masorah. You just look to see. There are millions and millions of fish, different minim of fish. Even the all of them, Bas Mekobob is not here. There's most of the dinim of kashrus, and the Torah lists off the non-kosher birds. And the Torah gives you the klolim for the fish and the klolim for the behema v'chaya. To determine whether any given fish is kosher or non-kosher, the Chumash says it depends on knapa v'kaskeses, and that's it. And the Rosh and the Tshuva writes that there's no need for any masorah. You just look to see. There are millions and millions of fish, different minim of fish. Even the world's biggest experts don't know all the fish. They keep on discovering. Every day, there's another 5,000 fish that a whole bunch of minim that they've discovered. So it all depends on snap of the kaskeses, and that's it. Many times you have kaskeses, but it's below the surface of the. It's not on the outside. So that's not acceptable. The Ramban HaChumash writes it's only called the kaskeses if you can use a knife and scrape off all of the scales by shaving off the skin in one direction. Sometimes you have a kaskeses, you have scales on the surface of the fish, but they're attached on both sides, so you cannot take a knife and scrape them all off by pushing in one direction. So according to the Ramban, that's not acceptable. The question is whether we should pass like the Ramban, because the Gemara never says anything about this. So that's a question that if you, the other poskim, are not so sure whether we should pass like the Ramban. That's supposed to be the shaila about the sturgeon. The sturgeon has scales, but the scales cannot be. The scales are attached on both sides. In order to get them out, you have to take a knife and pry it onto each and every scale and yank it off. You can't scrape it in one direction. So Ramban says al chumash that that's not acceptable. And then the later poskim, the Nedev Yehuda with the Mabamet Lahoyal, and in between the two of them, that's the discussion whether it's acceptable or not. But the halacha says that by fish you don't need any masorah. By oaf, the Chumash doesn't give any klal at all. The Chumash just lists off the non-kosher birds. So the only way to know whether the bird that you're eating is kosher or not is if you have a masorah. If you have a masorah that this is a min tohar, so you can eat it. The Gemara gives simonim. The Gemara in Perek Eva Trefis has a whole sugya of nesher. The sugya about the nesher is the eagle. So the Gemara gives you the whole discussion as to what the upshot. What's the similar dover to know whether any given bird is kosher or trei? But the halacha says you don't rely on those simon. The halacha says you have to have a masor. Oth nechol b'masor, you have to have a masor. You don't necessarily have to have a masor from your father. If a rabbi in yeshiva has a masor, it's also good. The rabbis in our yeshiva have no masor on any of these birds. The Sfaradim have more masoras than the Ashkenazim. Someone has a masor. It doesn't have to be dafke your community. If the other community has a masor, that this is good, and it appears that it's a reliable masor, so the din is that you can eat the bird based on masor. In the Heima and Chayo, the Chumash gives you simonim. It depends on Malagero and Mafres Parso, which is not that difficult to establish whether an animal, whether any given animal is Malagero or Mafres Parso. Once in a while, it's not so easy. Once in a while you have an animal that's always chewing, let's say a guy's always chewing on his chewing gum, that's not called malagera. Malagera means that the food goes down into the stomach and the enzymes are working on it, and then it comes back in the mouth, then the person chews it. Some people have a problem. Some people have a stomach condition that the food comes up again and it's awful tasting. And then they swallow it again or they spit it out, whatever it is. So the kosher animals always have that condition. That's the sin in kashrus, that the food goes down, then it comes back up, then it goes back down again, keeps on going up and down. So that's malagera. Sometimes you see an animal that's always eating, it's always chewing something, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's chewing what came back up from the stomach. That's not called malagera. That's the Torah Tmima poses akasha. In his commentary, I think it's on Parshas Re'eh, I don't think it's on Shemini. Chumash in Shmini gives you the kosher and the non-kosher animals. If you have malagera without mafiz parsa, you have mafiz parsa without malagera, it's also. And in order to be muta, you have to have malagera mafiz parsa. Everything is repeated in Parshas Re'eh. And there it lists off among the non-kosher animals the shesua. So what's the story with the shesua? So the Gemara says shesua is an animal that is malagera and it is mafiz parsa, and it's still not kosher. What's wrong? It's malagera mafiz parsa. The answer is that it has shnei gabin and shnei shedros. It has two spines, two separate backs. Sounds like with an empty space in between. Some funny animal. So the shesua, despite the fact that it is malagera and it is mafiz parsa, is also because it has shnei gabin and shnei shedros. So the Gemara presents machloikis Rabbi Shmuel, whether such an animal can really exist or not. So if the animal can't exist, so what's the chumash talking about? The answer is, it cannot exist as a min b'shnei atzma because it would die. But it can, as an anomaly, as an abnormal development, it can be born and it's going to die soon after it's born. So it'll never be my livlotus. So the Gemara says, according to the opinion in the Gemara, whenever there's a dispute between Rabbi Shmuel and Didi Mamanus, we usually pass them like Shmuel. And in Issa Beheta, we usually pass them like Rav. Hilchos HaKarav Isuri, Kishmol B'din, usually. So we pass them like Rav and Isurim over here. So Rav claims that such an animal cannot survive. So there is no min. There is no min that's called Shesua. So what is the Chumash talking about? And if such an animal will be born, a blood will be born, it's going to die soon after it's born, it's not going to survive. So what's the Chumash talking about? A Ben Pekua. There's a din in today's Sedra. Zos HaPeim HaShe Tachelu Ba Behema. So Rashi and Chumash quotes, what do you mean? A Behema, Ba Behema. An animal, inside an animal. So that's referring to a Ben Pekua. One of the rabbis in Yeshiva asked on a b'china, what is the Ben Pekua? So that one of the students wrote down the name of one of the Tanoim. So it's like Ben Azai, Ben Zom, and Ben Pekua. Now Ben Pekua is an animal. Ben Pekua means if you shech the cow and there's an uber inside the mother's womb, so the uber is nita b'shchit asima. That's called the Ben Pekua. Why is it called the Ben Pekua? The mother is the Pekua. The vlad is the ben. The mother's cracked, the mother's body is going to crack open in order for the baby to come out. So that's called the Ben Pekua. So a Ben Pekua min HaTorah is nita b'shchit asima. It doesn't require its own shchita. The Rabbanan, the Mishnah says, Mishumaris ayin. If the vlad is born and is bouncing around, hifis agabi karak, and is walking around, and it looks like a regular vlad, then I'm just going to shoot it and eat it. So people would think that I'm eating the Bela. So Mishumaris ayin, you have to shech the animal. And that's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch and Rebbe Kivega. What do you mean Mishumaris ayin? It's an issue of Marisayan. The whole thing is only purely Marisayan. Or no, Marisayan is the what motivated the rabbis to require Shechita, but now it requires Shechita. Not just, you have to be concerned about Marisayan. The difference is when you shech this Ben Pekua, do you recite a bracha or not? Whenever you do something Mishum Marisayan, that's a person in Madlik Ner Chanuk on both sides, he has a house that has windows on both sides. So the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, that you have to light on both sides of the house because of Marisayan. The people who will walk on that side will think that the guy's not lighting their Chanukah. So there are more rites in Hilchos Chanukah. When you light Mishum Marisayan, you don't recite the second bracha. It's only the Yisim Nikim Hashem and Mitzvot. It's not a mitzvah. It's in order to avoid violating an Avera. Marisayan is an Avera. You're not allowed to ruin your own, you're not allowed to tarnish your own reputation. You're not allowed to do something which will cause people to think poorly about you, even though you're not doing anything wrong. Your own reputation, you're not the balabos on your own reputation. You have no right to say Lashon Hara against yourself. So that's the din of Marisayan. So whatever you do, Mishum Marisayan doesn't require a bracha. So the Shaila is here, that's Rabbi Kivegir is Danan in Yeridei and Hilchos Shechita, shechting the Ben Pekua, is that a takana midrabbanan? What motivated the Chachamim to require Shechita is the consideration of Marisayan. But then they made a takana, the takana is a takana of Shechita. So you need Shechita midrabbanan, so you say a bracha and a mitzvah midrabbanan. Or should you say, no, the whole thing is purely Marisayan and no bracha is recited. So that's a discussion. So there is an institution of Ben Pekua. So the halacha says that the Ben Pekua is mutter even if it's dead. Let's say the uber inside is dead already. And if it would come out from the mother's body, you would not lend itself to shechita. Let's say the uber inside is alive, but it's a trefor. And if it were to be born, and you would shecht the vlad, which is a trefor, the shechita would not be matirit b'achila. But nonetheless, if it's not born yet, and you shecht the mother, and the uber inside is dead already, the uber inside is a trefor, the shechita same as matir the uber min haTorah. the Rabbanim Nishchita Satzman, if it's a trait, you can't shecht it, okay? But Minator, on the level of the Raisa, the Uber is Nita Bishchita Simo, that's a Dida Ben Pekua. So Rav claims that a Shesua, an animal with Shnei Gavin and Shnei Shadros, he claims that based on his understanding of biology, no such animal can possibly exist as a Min Bishnei Atzma. And the Pasuk must be talking about the Ben Pekua Shesua. That a Ben Pekua is Nita Bishchita Simo, even if, let's say, there's an elephant inside a cow. I sheft the cow. And after I sheft it, I see it's a big belly. And after I sheft it, I see that there's an Uber inside. And the Uber is a Chazir, or the Uber is an elephant or something. It's abnormal. So the din is, it's all Nita Bishchita Simo. The Shchita same is Mata everything. So even though Shchita same is Mata everything inside, if it's Bidmus Oaf, then it's not matish. The Gemara says it has to be behemoth the behemoth. If it's in the tzuras of, then the Gemara says that the shechita same is not matish. Okay. But what if it's the tzuras behemoth? The behemoth is a shesua. The Rav claims that that's what the pasuk is talking about. And we passed like Rav. And he said the head, we passed like Rav. So that's the psak in Yeridea. I remember when we were learning this in Yeridea, so Rav Soloveitchik said, and don't laugh. I didn't, then Pekur Shesua. He said he used to give hashgacha on the slaughterhouse in Boston, and he says he saw several times. And he wasn't there all day and all night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He came from time to time to check up on the shechita. He said he saw more than one occasion, he saw several times at Ben Pekur Shesua. The Dean, Shlita, Dean Adler, was explaining to me once why he told me he printed a book about this topic, something. He says he has a picture of a shesua on the cover of his book. And he said, he gave me some kind of a biological explanation why it's a common thing to be a Ben Pekua shesua. I already forgot the whole hezbo. Okay. But it's an abnormal development. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens like Rav, that we assume no such animal exists, and it must be referring to a Ben Pekua shesua. And Shmuel says no. He thinks that such an animal can exist. Theoretically can exist. It's not necessarily going to die because it has Shnei Gavin and Shnei Shadros. And that's the only thing the Pasuk is talking about, the Shesua that's walking around. And if it were to be a Ben Pekua Shesua, it would be Nita B'Shchita Sima, the same as an elephant, the same as a Chazir. That would be the Me'ei Behema Tohor. It would be Nita B'Shchita Sima, so Shesua Ben Pekua would be Muta. So the Torah Tamimo, I think in Parshas Re'ei, poses Akasha. He says he read in a book on biology that there is such an animal in the African jungles, a shesua, that has malagera, or mafis parsa, and it has shnei gabin and shnei shedros. And it lives, and it survives, and it has vladis, and told us the same. So he raises the issue, maybe we should reconsider the psak over here. If the machlekes Rabbi Shmuel is a machlekes the mitzias, whether such an animal should exist or not, can possibly exist, and what prompted Rav to interpret the pshat in the pasuk that is talking about a shesua ben pekua is because the whole such an animal can exist. We pass like Rav because we usually assume hilchos karab yisuri, but now that they write in the books that such an animal does exist, the biologists claim that such an animal does exist, and so we see with our own eyes that Shmuel is right. So Shmuel is right. Maybe we should reverse the pshat in the Yerideya that a ben pekua shesua is us there, maybe we should pass like Shmuel that it's Mutta. I don't know, I remember I once said over this Taina from the Torah Tmima, so someone who was listening said, it's Apikursus. Why is it Apikursus? Because we have an Iker and Amunah, Shazal Satara Lasehi Mochlefes. The laws of the Torah don't change. So I said, what do you mean the laws of the Torah don't change? Achloik is Rav Shmuel. So what do you mean? Because the Mechaber passed in the Shulchan Aruch like Rav, so he can't reverse the Pesach. I'm sure and every page in the Mishneh Berurah reversed the Pesach in the Shulchan Aruch. This man, he knows Mishneh Berurah. He never realized that. Mishneh Berurah has reversed the Pesach on every single page. On something. He didn't reverse every single Pesach. On every single page, he says, we found the Meiri, and we found the Yerayim, and we found the Maram Chalva, and the Chemed Moshe says this, and this one says this. Came out on every single page. He changed that. What do you mean? You never change a Pesach. The Rishonim on the Daf, the Ritva quotes on Chulin. The Ritva quotes the Rabbi. The Rabbi says, I saw a Shesua and it does exist, and I hold the din as like Shmuel. The Ritva writes like that. That he thinks the din should be like Shmuel, unlike the way it usually is. Anyway, so what happened was, this Kasha was written by the Torah Tmimah when he published his commentary on the Chumash, And then several years ago, there was a conference, an international conference of the zoologists or biologists, whatever you call them, and they came to the realization that they had made a mistake 150 years ago, that animal in the African jungles is a low malagera. It's chewing something, but it's not chewing its cud. The food doesn't come back from the stomach into the mouth. It leaves the food in its mouth, and it keeps on chewing for a long time. They had made a mistaken identification, and they have still not found the shesuah. That's a nimbit neyasma. This was Rabbi Levinger from Switzerland, published several svarim about kashrus and birds and animals. He's the brother of the famous Rabbi Levinger. He used to be very famous. Moshe Levinger from Hebron. He was always sitting in jail, always in the newspapers. Lechem Olchamas Hashem. So he has a brother in Switzerland who has Lechem Olchamas Hashem on the front of kashrus. I think he retired already now. He lives in Eretz Yisrael also. So he printed this just several years ago, that for 150 years the world thought that there was a shesua in the African jungles, and they had an international conference, goyim, and they ascertained that they made a mistake in identification, that it's not that animal was not malagera. Malagera is when the food goes down to the stomach, then it comes back up, and the animal keeps on chewing. So the pashtus is that just like fish don't require a masoira, we just see if it doesn't have snap in the kashkesis. Birds need a masoira because in Chumash there is no cloud. The Gemara tells you atzara shovish behem, what the kosher birds have in common with the non-kosher birds have in common. But the halacha based on the Chumash, it doesn't say anything about any simonim to determine whether it's kosher or not. Based on the Chumash, you have to have a masor. But by the behemah and the chayo, the pashto should be, it all depends on identifying properly, is it malager, mafes, parsa, and that's it. Malager, mafes, parsa should be mutter. So the shach writes in Yerideya that you need a masor. A two-line shach, you have to have a masor. So that's the question, what is the shach referring to? So pashto pshat in the shach, he said the following. How do you determine whether any given animal is a behemah or a chayo? What's the difference? Oh, the big difference is the mitzvah of Kisi Adam only applies to Chaya, does not apply to Behemah. Chelev, more important, mitzvah Kisi Adam is a mitzvah. Chelev is an Isakaris. Chelev only applies to Behemah, does not apply to Chaya. Osvei Ezbeno only applies to Behemah, does not apply to Chaya. The provision of Dam applies equally. The need for Shechita applies equally. The Mishnah in the fourth Perek in Bikurim has three parokim. So the fourth Perek is a Braisa. So the Braisa gives you all the dinim of Kui. It's all about androgynous and all about kui. So it gives you which dinam applied to Behemah, which dinam applied to Chaya. So how does one determine whether any given animal is a Behemah or a Chaya? So the Gemara in Elu Treifus has a discussion of this. The Gemara later in Kulin also, not just in Elu Treifus, later the Gemara tells by the shape of the horns, different simonim. So it's not easy to determine, not so pashut to determine whether any given animal is a Behemah or a Chaya. So the pashtus is that that's what the Shach says. To determine whether any animal is a behemah or a chaya, you have to have a masorah. But if you have malager, mafis parso, and you don't care, you're not going to eat the chaylev anyway. So you're not going to eat the chaylev anyway, you're going to do kisei adam bisafik anyway. It's just a question of eating the meat. So the pashto says that on that you shouldn't need a masorah. It should be mutter to eat an animal without a masorah, as long as it's malager or mafis parso. It should be mutter. So the Chazanish points out that the Chochmas Sodom did not understand the Shach like that. The Chochmas Sodom understood that the Shach, you know, the simple reading of the Shach could be understood. They're just saying to determine whether any given animal is a Behemah or a Chayah, to be Matar the Chelev, and that you need a Masar. But the Chochmas Sodom writes the Minig is not. So the Minig is that we don't eat flesh from an animal just by looking at the animal to see if it has Malager, Machis Bar. So we have to have a Masar. So on cows, we have a Masar. On deer we have a masorah. On some of the exotic animals, if you don't have a masorah, even though it's malager machis parso, so the Chazanish claims that the minig is like the Chochmas Sodom writes, that the minig requires a masorah. The din does not require a masorah. The minig does require a masorah. The Rambam in Hilchas Shmita the Yovel speaks about the significance of tradition in observance of mitzvahs. The Rambam quotes a Gemara in Erechin Daf Lamed Beis, where the Gemara says that towards the end of the period of the Bais Rishon, after the Golas Hashvatim, the mitzvah of Yovel was no longer Nohei, because the Pasuk says in Parshas Behar that the Yovel only applies. It says in the Parshas Behar, "Ukrosim dror ba'aretz l'chol yosheveha," that you should proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. That's the Pasuk on the Liberty Bell. I used to live in Philadelphia near the Liberty Bell. I used to walk over on Shabbos to visit the Mekamis HaKdoshim, Betsy Ross's house in Independence Hall, and so on. So the that Pasuk appears on the Liberty Bell. The Liberty Bell was commissioned to be made by the Jews of Pennsylvania. It was going to represent the state of Pennsylvania. And then the 13 colonies decided to take it. So the Jews of Patriot is made in Europe. The Jews of Patriot chose this Pasuk about liberty. Thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. And then the 13 colonies decided to adopt the Liberty Bell as their as representing the whole United States of America, which consisted of the 13 states at that time. So this Pasuk is a very important Pasuk, not only for the American country, for freedom in America, but for the issue of Shemitah Bezman Hazeh. The Gemara says that Yovel was not Noheg towards the end of the period of the Bais Rishon because he didn't have Kol Yosheveh Aleha. You only observe Yovel Deraisa Bezman Shekol Yosheveh, across the Medrash Baruch L'Kol Yosheveh, Bezman Shekol Yosheveh Aleha. When you have Pashup Shamiz, when you have the majority of the world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael, or perhaps what it means is you have representations of all of the Shvatim living in Eretz Yisrael, the details are problematic. Exactly how do you define Kol Yosheveh Aleha? Doesn't mean that if there's one Jew who lives in Chutz La'aretz, so you don't observe Yovel. Doesn't mean Kol literally. So that's the question, what the details are. So the Gemara says there in Erech and Daf Lamed Beis that despite the fact that at that period of time, towards the end of the period of the Bais Rishon, the mitzvahs of Yovel were not observed, nonetheless, they counted Yovel as a blank year. The Gemara has a machlokes hatanoim in the Dorim and in Erechin. How do you count? You count 7, 7, 7, 7 Li'olam V'Olam. And the 50th year, which is the first year of the next 7-year cycle, is a Yovel year. So that Shemitah, those 7 years, the first year you can't do Avodas HaKarka, and the 7th year you can't do Avodas HaKarka. You only have 5 years to do Avodas HaKarka. But he's saying, no. You go in cycles 50, 50, 50, 50. You don't go 7, 7, Li'olam V'Olam. You do 50, 50. So you have 7 times 7. And then Yovel is a blank year. It doesn't belong to any Shemitah. So that's how we pass them. That's how we assume. Yovel is a blank year. And there's one Tana, Reb Yehuda, disagrees. He says, no, that Yovel is you go 7, 7, 7, Li'olam V'Olam, and Yovel is the first year of the next cycle. And that year you only have that Shemitah, you'll only have that cycle of 7 years. You'll only have 5 years that you'll be allowed to do Avodas HaKarka. The Tumim in Choshen Mishpat, Rabbi Yonis and Abishitz, the Tumim in Choshen Mishpat and the Siman of Pruzbul present the opinion that we have not accepted, Rabbi Yudah's opinion, that you count 7, 7, Li'olam V'Olam. He presents it differently. He says, you count 7, 7, Li'olam V'Olam, and then as far as the Yovel is concerned, you count 50, 50, 50, Li'olam V'Olam. So the first Yovel will be the first year of the next Shemitah cycle. And another 50 years, the next Yovel will be the next year of the Shemitah cycle, be the second year of the Shemitah cycle. You have two concurrent counts. You count 7, 7, 7 Li'olam V'Olam to determine which year is Shemitah. Every 7 Yovelis, Yovel will be on the same year as Shemitah. The first Yovel will be the first year of a Shemitah cycle. Then 50 years later will be the next Yovel, will be the second year of that Shemitah cycle. Then 50 years after that will be the third year. And then there's going to come a year that is going to be, it'll be on the same year as the Yovel and Shemitah will be the same year. So the Achareidim say that that's against the Gemara. How can he write such a Rebbe? Rabbi Yehudah, it was going on. How can he write such a thing? It's against the Gemara. So the later Poskim write, yeah, but it's a Yerushalmi that says like that. So the Rebbe Rabbi Yonison forgot to write that he was referring to the Yerushalmi's version of Rabbi Yudah. The Babli is the favorite, not so. The Babli presents Rabbi Yudah's opinion that it'll always be the next year after the seventh Shemitah will be over. You don't go 50-50-50. You don't have two concurrent counts. Anyway, so we don't pass like Rabbi Yudah. Whichever version of Rabbi Yudah you want to accept, whether the Bavli's version or the Yerushalmi's version, we have not accepted Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So we taskin like the Chachamim that Yovel is a blank year. So the Gemara says in Erchin on Daf Lamed Beis that despite the fact that in the last few years of the Bais Rishon the mitzvahs of Yovel were not observed, nonetheless Manu Yovlos Lekade Shmitin, the Bez Nagoro counted Yovel as a blank year to push off the next Shmitah. They went in units, they went still 50-50-50. So they didn't have an obligation to observe any of the mitzvahs of Yovel, but they counted, they declared this is the Shnasa Yovel to push off the next Shemitah. So the Rambam writes, and in his opinion, that's what we should do Bizman Hazeh. We should not count 7-7 V'yom Avoid and every 7th year observe Shemitah. We should count 50-50-50-50. And even though we don't have Kol Yoshveh Ha'aleh, so far still the majority of the world Jewish population does not live in Eretz Yisrael, we don't observe Yovel at all, but we should still count the Yovel year as a blank year. Then the Rambam says, but that's not the practice. The Rambam doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says that is clearly not the practice. The Rabbonim who live, the Goyim who live in Eretz Yisrael, say you count 7-7-7 L'yom Avod, and every 7th year is the Shemitah. So the Rambam writes, even though to him, in his opinion, it doesn't make any sense, he says we have to follow the Masorah, because the tradition and the Masorah is an Iker Gadol in determining what the Halach is. Even though it absolutely doesn't make any sense, we should follow the Masorah. And that's where the Raivad is Masig, and he says no, he thinks we should follow the Rambam. We should not follow the tradition in Eretz Yisrael. As the Rav Soloveitchik once said, that to the best of his knowledge, this is the only place where the Rambam paskins against the Rambam, and the Raivad is Masig, and he thinks, no, we should paskin like the Rambam. The Rambam is right. Asogas Raivad, so we should paskin like the Rambam. The Rambam is right over here. So it's interesting, yeah. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik has a whole essay in the Sefer on the Rambam. He explains what the Shitas have got. It makes very good sense, but the Rambam did not think that it made any sense, and nonetheless, the Rambam was prepared to give in to the Shita Sagan. He says, if that is clearly the tradition, they follow the tradition. The Gemara says that even if for many years people have been practicing a mitzvah in a certain way, we spoke last night about this, the Rebbe Hita Beit Shan, that for years they were observing Hafrashas Trumas and Maisus in a section in Eretz Yisrael, Beit Shan, and Rebbe Paskin, that it's Chutz Lars. It depends how many years. If it would have been Taka centuries, last night I said it wrong, for centuries. It was centuries since the Binyan Bayi Sheni. Rebbe lived way after the Churban Bayi Sheni. But it wasn't, I don't think it was centuries that they were observing mitzvahs Tatuyas Baritz in this area of Beit Shan. If it would have been centuries, Rebbe would probably not have reversed the Psach. Whatever is a tradition, for centuries they leave it like that and you break your head to try to make sense out of this tradition. Like the Rambam over here, the Rambam says it doesn't make sense what the Goyim say, but he says they live there. They live in Eretz Yisrael and they're observing. I live in Chutz Lortz, I don't observe it. They live in Eretz Yisrael. And they claim that that's the way they always observe since the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni. They count 7-7 L'yom Avod. They don't, they quote a Gemara in Avodah Zarah in the first parent. That sounds like it says so that they are. You just count every 7th year of Shemitah. You don't count the 50th year as a blank year. So something that's been observed for centuries, you leave like that and you don't reverse it, and you break your head to try to understand why it should be so. And if you break your head, you'll come up with a very interesting pshat. Rav Chaim has a very easy pshat, and it makes very good sense. And after Rav Chaim wrote it, we don't understand why the Rambam didn't understand it. It's such a good pshat. So Rebbe Hita Beit Shan, the Gemara says, and Gemara comments on that even if something has been a practice for a long time, not for centuries though, something has been a practice for a long time, and the Talmud Chacham comes up with a chiddush, a startling chiddush, and he wants to reverse the Psak HaMekubal, Eimaz Nichon also. You shouldn't chastise the Talmud Chacham. You shouldn't say, no, we're not going to accept any changes. The Mishnah Berurah changes the Psak on every page of the Shulchan Aruch. There was always discussion. There was always debate. There was always a different opinion. If the Gemara says in Yevamos that there's a question exactly what type of a shoe is acceptable for Chalitza, so the Gemara says, our practices, we use this type of shoe. Then the Gemara says, even if a time will come, Eliyahu HaNavi will come and tell you that you're not allowed to use such a shoe, we will not listen to him. The minig has established that is the halacha. This is the practice for centuries. If the practice has been like that for centuries, so then you're not ma'arar and tzatzav shak. That's what Moshe Feinstein has in one of his tshuvas. There was a young man here from the neighborhood, from Washington Heights, from the Breuers community, who was a Kohen, wanted to go to medical school. So at that time, Rabbi Schwab was the rabbi in Breuers, and he told the young man he's not allowed to go to medical school. A kohen is not allowed to be metame lemason. So the young fellow said he has a heter, that a prominent rabbi in Eretz Yisrael gave a heter. So Rabbi Schwab said, but the heter is mistaken. There is no such heter. So the young man was very intent on going to medical school. So he assumed that this prominent rabbi in Eretz Yisrael is a greater rabbi than Rabbi Schwab. So Rabbi Schwab felt very bad about this. So he asked Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein said the heter is not a valid heter. So he asked Rabbi Moshe if he can send them. Rabbi Moshe usually only wrote a tshuva on something that was in it, that was a shayla, that was something that is what to discuss, something that what to debate. He didn't write an elementary thing. He's not going to write a tshuva. So Rabbi Schwab said that there's an issue in the community. Could he please write a tshuva, and he wants to send it out to all the people. So I remember many years ago, I got it, every member of Breuers got it in the mail. Rabbi Schwab made Xerox copies of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's handwritten tshuva, and they sent it out to all the members of the shul. So Rabbi Moshe, and then years later, this tshuva appeared in Igros Moshe. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes that since this has been the practice for centuries, that the Kohanim are not metame lemeisim, and they could have always come up with this chokhma that the rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, this prominent rabbi, came up with, and no one has come up with this idea. This is not a modern idea, what he came up with. This idea could have been done centuries ago also, and it's already centuries that this is the practice. We don't permit Kohanim to be metame lemeisim. So just like the Gemara says that even if Eliyahu HaNavi comes and he says you're not allowed to use a sandal for chalitza, ein shomer lo shekfano gohom, the sandal, the minig has established the halacha for many centuries already. So too over here, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes, there's also a minig for many centuries. If you have a minig for 25 years, 50 years, something like that, Rabbi Moshe has another tshuva where he complains to a certain Talmid Chacham why. This Talmid Chacham was a Talmud of his, from his Mishpacha also. So he complains that he understands that he was present at a bris, and they were mechabed him to hold a cup of wine to say the Barpi Agaf and the Bracha Shekiddush did mi beten. So most people have the practice that after you say Koreis Abris, the Bracha, you say Elokeinu Elokeinu Seinu Kayem Mishayel Azel of Yalul Imo Bikoreis Shmo Bizrael, and do the Kriyas Hashem, and then you take a sip of the wine after that Kriyas Hashem. And Moshe Feinstein didn't like that practice. And Moshe Feinstein's practice was that he said the Barpi Agaf, he would drink the wine right after the bracha of Koreis Abris. They sent a letter to this Talmud of his that's printed in Igros Moshe. Why didn't you follow me? You know that I always drink the wine right after Koreis Abris. Why didn't you follow me? And what you apparently he had spoken to him at the time. So this other rabbi, the Talmud of his, said, because that's not the minig. The minig olam is that everybody waits to drink the wine later. So Moshe Feinstein writes, that's not a minig. A minig that keeps on changing back and forth, every 50 years is not a minig. So he quotes, Rabbi Kivega had a grandson who was a chassidish rebbe, Rabbi Leibel Eger. It's a long story. He was a misnagid. Rabbi Kivega was a yeke. He lived in Germany. He had a son-in-law, Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum, who was a chassidish. So the grandson, Rabbi Leibel Eger, corresponded with his uncle. They lived in two different cities. Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum, he asked him, tell me some of the hanhagas of the grandfather. And he wanted to know about how he got along with the grandfather, with the chassidus, with the misnagid. He was a chassid, also the son-in-law. And Rabbi Kiveg was a strong misnagid. So he writes, so we have the correspondence. We have the letters that Rabbi Shmuel Birnbaum wrote to the grandson of Leibel Eger. So one of the several letters they have. So one of the letters he writes, he went to visit the in-laws for Yontif. So the father-in-law made him put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So he said, he almost died. It's the first time he ever put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. He almost died. But Rabbi Kiveg said, what can I do? In Germany, everybody puts on tefillin. But the son-in-law writes, he was very decent. He didn't make me say a bracha. By the Yekis, they say a bracha on a tefillin. He says, no one's going to notice what you say a bracha. So put on tefillin, don't say a bracha. So he says, he was very considerate, he let me get away, he didn't force me to say a bracha. So in one of those letters where the son-in-law of Shmuel Birnbaum is describing things about Rabbi Kiveger to the grandson, to Rabbi Shlomo Leger, that was the son of Rabbi Kiveger, Rabbi Leibel Eger. So in one of the letters of Rabbi Leibel Eger, he writes that Rabbi Kedega's practice was that he would drink the wine right after Koris Abris. That's how they all quote Rabbi Kedega's practice. That's from this collection of letters, from the Igris Sofrim. The Igris Sofrim is a collection of letters from the Schreiber family, because they had a practice. I think it's based on Sefer Hasidim, that they would never throw out the letters, personal letters that they got in the mail, they would never throw out. So they had an attic full of letters. So the fire department came and they said they're going to condemn the house. You can't leave a house full of letters from Sheshes Mebreshes. So they said if they don't clean out that attic within a week, they're going to condemn the whole house. They won't allow them to live there. So they started throwing out all the letters. And then some of the members of the family wanted to save some of the letters had been returned. So they didn't have too much time. So they started to save some of the letters. They put them into bags and they put them somewhere else. And they cleaned out the whole attic. So that the collection of letters has the Reiter in Hanhokis and Hagen and so on. That was printed and it's called Igra Sefer. And then there were more letters. They weren't all included in the Igra Sefer. So every so often, every couple of years, they keep on printing more letters from that, from the attic, from the Chassam Sofer's attic. So this was in one of the letters. So that's Rav Moshe writes. But this meaning as to when you drink the wine kept on changing every 50 years. Sometimes they did like Rabbi Kedega, sometimes they did not like Rabbi Kedega. They said, even though we live now in the 50-year tkufa, that everybody's doing not like Rabbi Kedega, but he said, that's not a meaning. You do it the right way, you do it my way, you do it like Rabbi Kedega did it. And you drink the wine, take a sip of the wine right after the bracha karas abris, it's a hefsik, it's not right to wait till later. Yeah, but if you have a meaning that's been around for centuries, like the minig about how to do chalitza, what type of ishu to do chalitza with, or the minig, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes to Rabbi Schwab, the minig that the Kohanim are not metamei l'meisim, and we don't follow this heter that this prominent rabbi conjured up in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Moshe writes that that's kvar no gom, if you have a minig that's been around for centuries, we assume that the minig establishes what the halacha is, like the Rambam writes regarding the Yovel year. We don't count the Yovel year as a blank year. The Poskim quote such a Tshuvas Haran. I think the Beis Yosef quote such a Tshuvas Haran regarding Megillah. The Mishnah says that one can fulfill the mitzvah Mikra Megillah either if you read it in the original Hebrew, or if it's written in translation, you can be Yotzei. Those who understand that language can be Yotzei if they read the Megillah from translation. The Mishnah and the Gemara say the people who understand Modis can be Yotzei Karmo to the Modis and Modis and the Gift and the Giftis and so on. So the Ran and the Tshuva raises a question, why don't we translate, the Ran lived in Spain, so why don't we translate the Megillah into Spanish? And we'll have more people understand the Megillah. Most of the people, Noshim and Amihoret, and many of the men, Amihoret and the Ketanim, they don't understand the Megillah, so wouldn't it make more sense, let's say today, to translate the Megillah into English, or translate the Megillah into Spanish, and read the Megillah from a translation? The Mishnah says that it's good, doesn't that sound good for the Eved? It's good l'chatchila. So why don't we translate the Megillah? So he says, look here, this has been up the Ran writes, this has been an issue from time immemorial. In the days of the Talmud they point out that you have Noshim and Amihoret who don't understand the Megillah. And we never heard of any community where they did. The Mishnah records that is the din theoretically. Maybe in the days of the Talmud, maybe there were some communities, but he says that there are centuries and centuries. We haven't heard of any community where they translated the Megillah in retrim translation, so we assume that that's the din, that it's best not to do it in translation. The question is, why not? So he says, even if we don't have any reason why, we should assume that there must be some good reason. And then he says, especially there's a good reason, there's a question if you have a Megillah written in two different languages, whether you're Yotzei. So some of the words we don't know how to translate. So those words, Achashtaran and Bnei Haramachim, are going to leave in the original because we don't know what they are. We don't know what kind of an animal it is. Rashi says some kind of a camel. We don't know what kind of a camel. A dromedary. What kind of a camel are you going to call it? So since we don't know how to translate that word, so you're going to have half the Megillah is going to be in Persian, half the Megillah is going to be in Spanish. So that's a machlokes. We discussed it before Purim. That's a machlokes. The Rambam and the Rabbi in Hilchos Gittin, based on two Girsas in the Tosefta and Gittin. If you have a get that's written half in one language, half in another language, get can be written in any language. But if the get is written half in one language, half in another language, that's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid, based on two Girsas in the Tosefta and Gittin. Is there a hemshechias? Is that considered one text? So if you should adopt the Shita L'chumra there, so you would adopt the same Shita L'chumra by Megillah. There's no hemshift, there's no continuation from one language to the other. So that's the explanation. But first the Ran says, we know that the din is that we don't do it. Because since the minhag has been for many centuries like that, it was always a good idea to translate the Megillah so that more people will understand it. But it was never done for centuries and centuries, so we should leave it the way it is. Nothing has changed that we should require a translation of the Megillah. That's why many Rabbanim today are very upset. Some person who apparently has smicha from Yeshiva University published an essay on the internet. I don't know, I didn't look at it yet. Maybe I'll have some time, I have to look at it. About why we should start giving women aliyahs. The Talmud gives a reason why you don't give women aliyahs, and he thinks that the reason doesn't apply to Zman HaDin. It's highly questionable whether anybody will accept this, yet people not knowledgeable will accept any wild idea. But the question is whether Rabbanim, Talmid HaChamim, serious people will accept this. Look, this has been a practice for centuries and centuries, clearly close to 2,000 years. So to change a practice of 2,000 years, can't just be the person who published the essay is not in the field of rabbinics. Apparently he has smicha and he does something else for a living. He's a lawyer or something. The person not in the field of rabbinics is going to reverse the trend of 2,000 years. That's very unusual. So we have instances where masorah is required in order to eat birds. In order to eat kosher birds, you have to have a masorah. We have other cases where the minig is that we require masorah, the way the Chof Masodam understood the Shach, so the Chazanish claims, he feels that that is the minig. The minig is like the Chof Masodam, that you need a masorah to eat the Hema V'chaya as well. It's not enough if you can determine on your own that it's malagir, mafis parsed by fish. We never develop such a minig. And then masorah is important in other areas as well. If you have a masorah as to what the Psak Halach is, that's very, very, very rare that we're going to reverse it. Unless you're going to establish that it was a mistake all along. That's going to be pretty hard to establish that it was a mistake for 2,000 years.
For a long time, the learned
Torah and Torah, so why don't we say that girls should learn? Good question, right. That's why the Chofetz Chaim originally was very opposed. That's why the Chofetz Chaim was opposed. He said, the Gemara says it's not proper. The Gemara, the Rambam Shulchan Aruch says it's not proper to teach women Torah. Especially Torah Shabbat. At that time they were just teaching a little Torah Shabbat, very little Torah Shabbat, and when they exactly started. That's why the Chofetz Chaim was very opposed. And when he went to meet with the other Rabbanim, he asked the people in the Yeshiva that they should say Tehillim, that they shouldn't allow a mikshel to occur, they shouldn't allow this basically to come about. The people alive today, he said they remember saying Tehillim in Rad, in Yeshiva. When the Chofetz Chaim left, he said they should say Tehillim, that there shouldn't be a mikshel. And then when he met with the others, who were not from his part of Poland, in his part of Poland there was no problem. When he met with the Ger Rebbe, with the others from the other parts of Poland, the other parts of Russia, they explained to him why there was a problem. So he said, look, under those circumstances, you have no choice. But that's when he came and he said that there's a major change. That if we won't teach the women Torah, they were being exposed to apikursis. They were being exposed to, they were reading books on novels and books on apikursis and everything. So he said, you have to be mechazik and really you have to be mechazik shmiras on this by exposing them to Torah. Yeah. Yeah, but the question is giving women aliyahs. That's going to be mechazik emunah. I haven't seen it yet. I'll have to see about that. The Sefer HaChinuch, when he quotes the Dina from Terei Sedra, so he writes, it's a mitzvah, it's really the Rambam has like that, but I mentioned the Sefer HaChinuch because the Minchas Chinuch has a comment on it. Minchas Chinuch should have written a Sefer on the Sefer HaMitzvahs LaRambam. I don't know why he wrote on the Sefer HaChinuch. So that's why the Sefer HaChinuch became popular, because of the Minchas Chinuch. the Sefer Chinuch copies from the Rambam that there's a mitzvah livdak simane oif tohar. Before you eat chicken, before you eat any bird, before you shef the bird and eat it, it's a mitzvah livdak simane oif tohar. Or mitzvah livdak simane hadogim, or mitzvah livdak simane behem of achaya, before you shef it. So that's why there are some. What do you mean mitzvah livdak? What kind of a mitzvah is that? It's an issa to, if you eat the behemoth meyah, or if you eat a dakta meyah, right, an issa. So what do you mean a mitzvah livdok? What exactly does that mean? The Rambam quotes, Rabban Lichtenstein spoke about this the other day in the Shia that they had. The Rambam has in the Minyan HaMitzvahs, called Sipa Tahara Tachelu. It's a mitzvah to eat a kosher chicken. What do you mean? It's a mitzvah to eat kosher chicken? And what if a person wants to be a vegetarian? So he's mavatul mitzvah every day. It's mitzvah to eat. Whenever the Chumash has a mitzvah, and it's unclear how often you have to do it. So the Rambam seems to assume mitzvah to do it once a day, every day, like tefillah. Rambam assumes that tefillah is there, right? He said once a day, every day. So the stipler writes, where did the Rambam get once a day, every day? Because the Gemara says duchening. Duchening the Kadam are only mechuyav to duchen once a day, every day. That's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, at the end of the third parak. So the stipler says the Rambam understood from that Gemara, whenever there's a mitzvah, it doesn't say clearly in the Chumash how often you're obligated. So it's assumed that it's once a day, every day. Talmud Torah would have been assumed also once a day, every day, if not for the pasuk in Yeshua that says v'havisa b'yom v'loyla. So that pasuk is megala. You have to learn a little bit once a day, every day, and once a night, every night. If not for that, you would have been yotzei once a day, every day. You wouldn't even have to have learned once a night, every night. So the pasuk in Yeshua is megala that the Talmud Torah is a little different. So what we hear also, kaltzi b'torah t'achelu, once a day, every day, you have to have chicken. How can it be? It's a mitzvah to have chicken. So he said that Rav Soloveitchik understood it doesn't mean it's a mitzvah. It means a lava ba mechlala say. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher birds. That's all it means. So they ready, the Sefer HaChinuch already counts a mitzvah say, not to eat non-kosher birds. And a mitzvah lois say, there's a lois say if you eat a non-kosher bird, you get malchus. And then there's a mitzvah livdak b'simonim. A third mitzvah, livdik b'simani. Well, what is that? The third mitzvah, livdik b'simani behem atahira, livdik b'simani hadog. What is that mitzvah, livdik b'simani? So the Minchas Chinuch works on this, what has been added over here. So he says, what he means is the following. Let's say a guy's going to take a fish, and they give him a fish, he fries the fish, he gobbles it down, without checking to see if it's a kosher fish or non-kosher fish. And that was not right. You shouldn't have eaten it. But then later on, it turns out that it was a kosher fish. Let's say he cut half the fish. He eats half the fish, gobbles it down without checking. Then later on, he checks and he sees that it has not the kashkesis on what's left. So the Minchas Chinuch says, despite the fact that it turns out that it was kosher, but still he was in violation of this mitzvah. There's a mitzvah livdik b'simanim. You're supposed to check the simanim before you eat it. And even though it turns out later on that everything was 100% okay, but since b'shas ma'isim, when he ate it, he hadn't yet checked the simanim, so we say b'shaita he was over avada yisa. Not just that it's a suffix, the rice of l'chumim should do it in suffix. No, it's avada yisa. It's avada because he is mevatel the yisa. Some of the akhreinim add on, before the Minchas Chinuch, they add on more than the Minchas Chinuch says. What if you have a roiv? I have a fish, and the roiv is that it's probably kosher. Let's say the fishermen know that when they go fishing in this part of the ocean, this season of the year, the roiv is that it's going to be kosher fish. Or the overwhelming majority, they catch 1,000 fish, and 950 of the fish are going to be kosher, and 50 are going to be treif. So that's an overwhelming roiv, that's a tremendous roiv. So some achareinim write that that's what it means, mitzvah livdik b'simanim, that you're not permitted to follow acharav nahatas. There is a pasuk acharav nahatas. You have a right to follow the ruba delesa kamon whenever there's any suffix. You have a right to follow, and it's no longer called the suffix deraisa. And here the Torah says no mitzvah livdik b'simanim to be mevadei, to make sure that it's a vados. Yeah, that's a question. How far does that go? That's why Pesach Frank has a tshuva where he quotes this rivosh. It goes into the details. So he says if it will be 999 out of 1,000 fish are kosher, then there's no mitzvah. Then you're not in violation of the essay. If it's 50 out of 1,000 not tray for fish, then you are in violation of the essay. It depends how strong the roiv is. If it's an overwhelming roiv, if it's an extremely overwhelming roiv, then one is not even a violation of the mitzvah. Yeah. one of the Rabbanim had a taina that one is not permitted to eat tuna fish, even if it's true that all of the tuna has all the tuna that's sold. There are many different kinds of tuna, but the only three kinds that are sold for human consumption all have snapper bekaskeses. The yellowfin with the skipjack, with the whatever it is. Already forgot. So so all the three that people eat all have snapper bekaskeses. So one of the rabbonim had a taina, even if Ali Bedemes it has snapper bekaskeses, but if you don't have a Jew checking the simonim in advance, so then you mevatel the mitzvah livdik the simonim. So this is simply a mistake. The Darki Chiva, who's always the biggest machna, the Ninkacha, as a chiva Darki Tshuva on Yerideya. So the Darki Tshuva raises a question that when we shech calves and when we shech cows, we don't check to see if it has split hoofs, and we don't wait half an hour to see if it's chewing its gut. The shech sees a cow and he shechs it. So I mitzvah livdik b'simonim. So he says, no, mitzvah, or yes, another kasha. The din is, let's say, if you have a fish, there are many fish like this. This is not the amoyfis. There are many fish that the minute you pull them out of the water, all of the scales fall off. You don't have one scale left on it. So the Gemara learns after from a pasuk that it's still kosher. So the Darki Tshuva asks the kasha, how are you talking? It's a livdik b'simonim. How can you check the simonim if it doesn't have any scales? So he says the answer is that's not what it means. Mitzvah livdik b'simonim means if you have an unknown fish or you have an unknown animal, you don't know whether it's a dak tohar or a dak tummy. So then Halacha says, not only is it a stake of the rice of Luchumah, but there is suffix. And some poskim, the Rivosh holds, even if you have a rove that it's going to be kosher, you're not allowed to rely on the rove. You have to be bodik b'simonim to ascertain that it's a dak tohar. What if I know it's a tuna fish? It's a yellowfin, or it's a skipjack, whatever it is. And I know it's that type of a fish that is kosher. I know it's a cow, I know it's a calf, I know it's a deer. If you know what the animal is, and you know that this animal has snapper bekaskeses, you know the fish has snapper bekaskeses, you know the animal has malager, mafis parso, so then he says, no mitzvah livdik b'simonim. The mitzvah livdik b'simonim only goes on an unknown min. But if you know what the min is, so you're yoytze the mitzvah livdik b'simonim, by identifying, you look at it, you see it's a calf, so I know. So shen yoytze givet. I know that calves have malager, mafis parso, so there's no problem.
Always
have to get something.
If
it's checked,
that's
a special mitzvah.
Can you
get
fish?
No, you're not allowed.
Without this mitzvah, this is a special.
What do you need the mitzvah? It's not a speaker, the rice on the chumah. Yeah. Right, so that's what the Rivosh says. The answer is even if you have a roif, that it's kosher. You're not allowed to follow the roif because of this mitzvah, livdik b'simon. But even the Rivosha says that, writes himself, that if you have an overwhelming roiv, then even he will agree. Because the Gemara says the Farish like that. If there are locations where we know that you never have any non-kosher fish. Because of the nature of the sand, the earth on the bottom of the river, or whatever. So based on if it's such an overwhelming roiv, that it's one in a echad mini elef, so then even the Rivosh agrees that the one is not in violation of the mitzvah of this month. Or the Minchas Chinuch suggests, let's say the person violated, he went ahead and he ate it, then it turns out that everything was kosher. So it's a great Muslim Mafreya that he only violated the Sfeika Deraisa Lechumra. He shouldn't have done it. So he says, no, not only was he in violation of Sfeik Deraisa Lechumra, he was in violation B'taras Vada of this mitzvah Livdik B'simon. This is B'taras Vada. The Sfeika Deraisa Lechumra is only B'taras Sfeik, and this he was over B'taras Vada. Otherwise, taka doesn't make sense. What do you need? That's the Minchas Chinuch kasha, the Rivosh's kasha. What do you mean a mitzvah livdik b'simonim? If you're not bodik, it'll be a suffix deraisa. Of course you can't eat the fish if you don't know if it's kosher. Gemara in Bechayrus in the first perik in the Gemara in Bava Kama perik Meruba quotes a machlokes Tanaim. What's the din by Kogut ben Paro? A cow gives birth to a vlad. This cow is from Sheshes Mei Bereshis. It's a para bas para bas para bas para all the way back to Sheshes Mei Bereshis. So it's a para and it gives birth to a vlad, an abnormal development, a gomel. The para gives birth to a gomel. That's called kolut. Then para. Kolut means parsos of plutus instead of parsos of instead of being split, it's kolut means that it's connected together. So that's a machloikis hatanaim. So one tana is of the opinion that kolit ben para is also b'achila, and we pass him that it's mutter. That we ignore the fact that it the animal that I want to eat is doesn't have simonitara. As long as the yichus of this animal is that it's a kolit ben para, and the mother is a para bas para bas para, all the way back to sheishes meibereishes. So the halacha says that it doesn't have to have its own malagera mafis parasa. Even though it's not mafis parasa, it's a kolot. The halacha says that it's a mintor. What if it's the reverse? What if you have gomel, all the way back, sheshes, meibereshes, and the gomel gives birth to a parah? What's the din in that case? So then the din is that it's awesome. The gomel gives birth to a parah, obviously an abnormal development. So a para bas gomel is also b'achila. So the Mishnah, that's a Mishnah b'chiris in the first pair. So the Pischei Tshuva and Yerideya in more than one place, in three places, quotes a sefer Yad Elio. Shadas Tshuva is Yad Elio. I don't know who it is. Who raised the suffix regarding the nature of this prohibition? What's so usher about the para bas gomel? Why is the para bas gomel awesome? Do I say, since the mother is a gemala, all the way back to sheshes meibereshes, so the vlad is called a gomel? The vlad is mamisha behema tameya. It all depends on the yichus. Just because due to a quirk and anomaly it developed as a para doesn't mean anything. Just like the reverse. If you have a gomel, call it ben para. If you have a para bas para gives birth to a gomel, so the din is that it's mutter. You ignore the fact that it doesn't have mafis parasa. So here also, since all the way back, it's the mother is a gemala, so the par is also a gemala. Par is also, the vlad is also a gomal, and we ignore the fact that it has this moment, it's a min tummy. Or should I perhaps assume that no? Maybe the din is to determine that any given animal is a min tahor, either its own malagar mafis parasa is enough to declare it as a min as a behema tahora. Or if it's a mintar means its lineages. The mother was a para bas para all the way back to sheshes meibereshes, and the vlad is a gomel. So I say that the vlad is really a para. So maybe the halacha says that either if it's a mintar, either the malager mafis paras of all the generations before helped to determine this one as a mintar, or its own malager mafis paras, even though all the way back it's a gomel. The mother is a gemala bas gemala. This one has its own malager mafis paris, it's muta, but the soft kosafi paskin that it's asa. So maybe we paskin it's asa because it's a yotzim in ha'asar asa. The din is that if you milk an elephant or you milk a pig, so the milk that comes out is asa. The gemara learns that in the pasuk bas hayano, and the chumash lists off the non kosher birds. So one of the non kosher birds is bas hayano. What do you mean bas hayano? The yana has male and female bloodis. Why is only the female basayana? So the Gemara in Eilat Treifus understands basayana is alluding to the beitzas oiftome. It's alluding to the egg. That even though the egg is not fertilized, it doesn't develop into a yana, still, a yotze min aser is awesome. So based on that pasuk, that beitzas oiftome is asura, so we establish also that cholot behemoth mayor is asura called a behemoth trefo. Let's say you have a cow, a kosher animal, but it has a broken leg in such a way that it's a trefo, so the milk that you get from that cow is also asa. You're not allowed to have any yotzim and ha'asa. And that's what the Pischei Tshuva quotes a suffering from the Sefer. What's the din when you have a para is born to a gemala? All the way back, the family, they were gemalim. And there's an abnormal occurrence, and the vlad comes out in the shape of a par. It's mamish malager mafis parsa, so it's usr. Is it usr because we say it's a mintame? We ignore its own simonim, the fact that it happens to have malager mafis parsa. The simonim are always determined by the yichus of the mishpacha. We ignore its own simonim. We say it's a behemoth mei or mamish. Oh no! You can either declare it's a behemoth Torah by its own simonim or by the simonim of the mishpacha. Here it has its own malager mafis parsa. The only reason why it's aser is because it's a yotzim and aser. What's an afkamina? It's aser. What's an afkamina? It's a medrei tahin, it's a medrei taher. So you got to remember, used to say, if you have a chakira without an afkamina, it's not a chakira. I don't know, they print down the name of Rav Baruch Ber, then he said otherwise. I don't know what that means. They quote, I think, in the name of Rav Baruch Ber, that he once made some kind of an obscure chakira, and someone asked him, what's an afkamina? So he said, the afkamina is whether you understand the Torah properly. I remember Rav Soloveitchik saying in Shia more than once, he said, my grandfather Rav Chaim never cleared any chakiras. He says, my grandfather used to learn the Gemara, Rashi and Tosfos, Rama Meraita. And then he would see that there are different ways to interpret the Gemara. So he would give an interpretation of Rashi, an interpretation of Tosfos. And then when he would present it in the Shir, when he would present it in writing, so he would write it in the form of a Chakir. But it's not that the Chakir came first. And then later on he started searching around to see who holds Tzad A and who holds Tzad B. He interpreted, he learned up Rashi. Oh, you see the Rashi learns like this, and Tosfos learns like that. So as a gimmick, a presentation, some people when they lecture, they pace back and forth. Some people sit. Some people scream. Different kinds of, some people throw shtenders. All kinds of forms of presentation. So just because a person presents a shir by making a chakira and then saying the afkeminis and then he shows the Rashi and says, doesn't mean that that's the way he arrived at this conclusion. Doesn't mean that he started off with a chakira and then he started to search him up. So that's what I remember, Rav Soloveitchik, unless my memory is deceiving me. That's what I remember. He said two things. He said a chakira without an afkemin is not a chakira. Sometimes you learn a gemara and you're not sure what the pshat is A, pshat is B. So what's the difference whether it's A or B? So if you have the difference, halacha lemaisa, then you have to think about it. Just the philosophical hakiras, he said, a hakira without an afkamina is nishken hakira. And then he said, number two, my grandfather never cleared hakiras. He used to learn the Gemara. When he learned the Gemara, the different pshatim and the rishonim says, so he realized that he learns like this, he learns like this. So he used the hakira as a style of presentation and writing. And Baal Peh, that's a gimmick in presenting. But basically, Rav Chaim didn't walk around with chakiras all of his life. Anyway, so what's the difference in this chakira? The suffix of the Tistei Tshuva, B'Shem Ayad Aliyo. So there are several nafkaminas. First of all, if you drink chalav be'ema tmeya, or if you eat beitzei of tomei, there is a dispute between Tosfos and the Rambam, which is quoted by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik on the Rambam, Hilchos Machos Asuris, whether there's malchus or not. The Rambam's opinion is that there's no malchus. The Rambam holds that it's only an iser aseh. A yotzim and aser is aser, bas hayano, but it's not a lois aseh. It's only an iser aseh. Tosfos in Eilu Treifus writes otherwise. Tosfos assumes that you have malchus that is included in the lois aseh. So if one assumes there, and Tosfos gets stuck because of their position that yotzim and aser gets malchus and psochim, and the second pair of Tosfos gets stuck with a kasha, and they get involved in a whole plunder. And the Rambam has a mocker from that place. The Rambam understands in the Gemara that there's never any malchus on ayotim and osim. Machlekes, the Mishnah has a machlekes hatanoim. Machlekes of lezen Rabbi Yeshua. Let's say a person has orlot la yakerem, some fruits that are orlot la yakerem. The pair is, that's a machlokes hatanoim. So Tosfos asks the kasha, but let it be yotzim and aser. Everybody should agree that you get malchus. How can it be a machlokes? So Tosfos works very hard to answer that kasha. So the Rambam says, what's the problem? Yotzim and aser is an iser, but you don't get malchus. You only get malchus if you eat the original thing itself. So mashkem ayotzim and azeisim and anovim is considered zeis. the peiris, that's a machlokes hatanayim. So Tosafos says the kasher. But let it be yotzei min aser. Everybody should agree that you get malchus. How can it be a machlokes? So Tosafos works very hard to answer that kasher. So the Rambam says, what's the problem? Yotzei min aser is an iser, but you don't get malchus. You only get malchus if you eat the original thing itself. So mashkem ayotzei min azeisim min anovim is considered zeisim, and it's considered anovim. If you eat grape juice, that's considered another form of eating grapes. And if you drink olive oil, that's considered like the original bien, as if you're eating the olives. If you drink orange juice, that's mashkim ayotzei, that's yotzei min aser. So that's why we would trust them that there's no malchus there. The only two mashkim that are dinam keguf apri atzmo is ayotzei min azeisim min anovim. Anyway, so that's a machlokes tesis in the Rambam. So one nachkamina would be if a person will eat the flesh of this parah bas gomel, would they be bas gemala, would they be malchus or not? Then the pischei tshuva in Hilchos Sefer Torah, he quotes it three times. I think he quotes this sotik in three different places. Then in Hilchos Sefer Torah, the third chelik yeredeya, he quotes it with the following nachkamina. It's not presented well. I don't know, you got to look in the original source to see what exactly the Ad Aliyah writes. He writes the following shaila. The din says you can only write Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzahs on Or Behemah Tehoro. The Gemara learns that from a pasuk. You cannot write a Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzah on Or Behemah Temeya. What if you have a Behemah Tehoro but it's Nisnabla or Nitrafa? Maisa, he can't eat the flesh. What is the mocker for that din? The pasuk says, "The man tiyatar Hashem eficha kibiyat chazaka tiach Hashem insaim." Says in the parsha of Tefillin that the purpose of Tefillin is "The man tiyatar Hashem eficha." So the Gemara has an additional. The pasuk pshat in the pasuk is that wearing Tefillin will be mechazik emunah. Tiyatar Hashem eficha. By wearing Tefillin, this will have ashpa that people will be mechazik emunah and yitzias mitzrayim. Fine. But the Gemara has an additional level of interpretation, reading in between the lines, that Torah Hashem has to be written on klaf, which is mutar b'ficha. That's the Gemara by Memadlikim in the second parak of Masechah Shabbos, and later in Shmaya Neshuatzim, the first daf in parak Shmaya Neshuatzim. Masechah Shabbos has 24 prokim, so a lot of room for everyone. The parak Shmaya Neshuatzim also, the Gemara has this discussion about Torah Hashem b'ficha min amutar b'ficha. You can only write sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzah on klap, on parchment that was taken from Or Behemah Torah. What if the animal is a Behemah Torah? It's a cow. The parchment is from a cow. But this cow happens to be Osa Bachila because it's in a veil or a trefa. So that the Gemara says that's okay. That's acceptable, that's permissible. I remember many years ago, one of the Gerei Rebbes died. Must have been 45 years ago. I don't know which Rebbe was which. So they published a collection of hanhogas and stories. So they printed this story, that a sofer once came to that Ger Rebbe, maybe the Imre Yemes, I'm not sure who was who. So a sofer came to the Ger Rebbe and he was telling the Rebbe all of the Hidurim that he's medactic about when he writes Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah. So he mentioned, among other things, that despite the fact that the Halacha says you may write on parchment that comes from a Neveh or Trefa, he's machna only glat kosher. He will only use the parchment that was taken from Or Behemah Tehora, that was Nishchat Kedin, and it turned out that it was glat kosher. So they quoted in this publication, if it's true, I don't know, they quoted that the Rebbe recommended that he should stop that practice. He recommended Badafki should use Nevelus Atrefus. Why? He said a Behemah that had a proper Shechita, so the Shechit said a Brocha on the Behemah when he Shechted it. So that Behemah had its Tikkun. Everything that Ribbono Shel Olam created in the world is Shehakol Baruch L'Chvodo, L'Chvod Shamayim. Everything, like the Mesilas Yesharim writes in the Hagdolah, everything in the Bria yearns to serve in the form of Avodas Hashem. So this Behemah already was Yaitzei. Its flesh will be eaten by some Jews who will be learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, so its flesh will be used for mitzvahs, so it will have a tikkun. And the Shechit said to Bracham, and he Shechted it, said, this animal doesn't need a tikkun. A mitzvah would be, preferable would be, you should use Or Behemah Trefa Unavela, which never had a kosher shechita. So Nebach, what are you going to do with that flesh? The Nochem are going to eat it, they're going to do Averis. No one said a bracha when the Shech did it. So you should use that skin from those animals that they should have a tikkun. Okay. So the Halacha says that you're not allowed to use Or Behemah Tmeya, but you are permitted to use Or Behemah Tahara, despite the fact that it's Nevelus Atrefas. How is one to understand the nature of this din? So the pasha, it's not a kasha. The pashtus is we understand it very well. The hide of an animal is not edible. Even if you have a pig or you have an elephant, the star, the hemat meyer, is prohibited. The flesh that's going lachil osadim is prohibited. The kanayim and the klofim and the gidin the batzamis and the or, the parts that are not roi lachila, some parts of or are roi lachila. Let's say chicken skin. A lot of people eat chicken skin. Those that don't eat it because of cholesterol or whatever. They don't want to get fat or something. It's not healthy. They just discovered recently it's not healthy. But for years people have been eating the skin of chicken. So there's some parts of the animal skin that are roi lachila some. If you cook it, the flesh itself is not roi lachila unless you cook it. So some of the skins, if you cook it, they'll be roi lachila. Other parts of the skin, not roi lachila anyway. So what do you mean you're not allowed to write Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzah on or behemoth tmeyo? What's wrong? The behemoth tmeyo is behemoth tmeyo. The or is not behemoth tmeyo. The answer is no, but it's part of a behemoth tmeyo. Even though it's not a function of whether the skin is kosher or non-kosher. All the skins in the world are kosher. The skin that you make parchment from is not roi lachila. It's not non-kosher, it's not treif. The halacha says if it's part of a non-kosher animal, you're not allowed to use it. So that halacha in the opposite direction, if it's part of a kosher animal, even though the kosher animal may not be eaten, it's an avela trefa, so what? But that doesn't affect the skin anyway. Even in an elephant, the skin is not affected, the skin is kosher. The answer is, if it's part of a non-kosher animal, you can't use it to write Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah. If it's part of a kosher animal, despite the fact that the kosher animal is osla b'achila, you may use it. So that's, al-pi pashtus should be the nafkamina over here. If you have a Torah, baz gemalo, Parashanolda mena gemalo, which is not permitted to be eaten, it's also b'achila. So the question is it also b'achila because we label it as a behemoth tmeya and you get malchus, or is it also b'achila despite the fact that it has malagir mafis paras on its own and it should really be labeled as a nintoha, but it's yaitzim in ha'asar asa? So there wouldn't be any malchus. So what would be an afkamina? If it's a behemoth tmeya, then you can't use the or behemoth tmeya to write Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah. But if it's a behemoth, basically it's a behemoth tahora, but you're not allowed to eat it because it's yaitim in ha'asr, so then it should be like the velo trefa. Just like the skin of the velo trefa may be used to write Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah, so to Alpi Pashtus, the skin of the behemoth tahora shenolda minat meyo should also be able to be used for writing Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah. There is a discussion in Rabbi Kiveger and the Chasam Sofer and many other Achroidim. The Pischei Tshuva quotes this whole discussion regarding the Gemara says, why are we permitted to drink milk? Why shouldn't we consider all milk as a yotze min ha'aser aser? Because beimah b'chayeh is b'cheskas iser medicine. Until you shef the animal is aser. Rashi says the animal is Eva Menachai. Tosis disagrees. It's not an Eva Menachai. Eva Menachai says if you yank off a limb from the animal, but Be'elah B'chayeh, while it's all connected, Lav Leivor Memeres. That's a Machlokes of Yochanan Reish Lakish in the end of Perek Gid Anoshe, whether the whole animal, while all the limbs are connected, is already called Eva Menachai or not. So Rashi writes that the famous statement, Nama Ravun Be'elah B'chayeh, B'ches Kasis Remeres, is B'ches Kasis Eva Menachai. Rashi holds Be'elah B'chayeh Leivor Memeres. And Tosis disagrees. We shouldn't. That's Reish Lakish. We should pass like Rabbi Yochanan, like the Rama passes. Be'elah B'chayeh Lav Leivor Memeres, not an Eva Menachai. So Tosis says that the behema, while it's alive, is ena zvucha. There is such an iser ena zvucha. And Rashi apparently thinks like the other opinions in Tosis. There ain't no such iser. There is no iser ena zvucha. The Torah says, v'zavachta kashet tzivisicha, if you shech, you will remove the iser nevela. If you won't shech, you'll have an iser nevela on your hands. The animal will be dead. But while the animal is alive, it's not a nevela. And the many Rishonim hold there is no Eina Zvucha. So that's what prompted Rashi to say that the Yisr Behema B'chaya is an Yisr Rabbeinu Menachai. And Taisa disagreed. Whatever. But the animal while it's alive is also B'chaya. So the Gemara in B'chaya's Davav raises the question, how are you ever permitted to drink any milk? So the Gemara finally answers that we have a Pasuk that praises Eretz Yisrael as Eretz Yisrael is Chol B'Dvash. You're not allowed to advertise trefa thing. You're not allowed to say Eretz Yisrael is the best place in the world. They have the worst dirty magazines and they have the worst movies in the world. Come to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, we have the most awful movies. So the Torah is advertising Eretz Yisrael. We have trefa. Eretz Yisrael is called a dvash. It's trefa. So what kind of a shevach Eretz Yisrael is that? Obviously the dvash is kosher. The dvash that the pasuk is praising is the dvash temorim. It's not the dvash devorim. The dvash devorim is mutas based on a different pasuk, but this pasuk praising the Eretz Yisrael is dvash temorim, not the kashas. And the cholov is cholov. So you see that cholov is mutter. That's how the Gemara says. You see the cholov is mutter. So the Akronim ask a question. All right, you see the cholov is mutter for the Jews. How do you know that a Nachri is permitted to drink cholov or cheese or butter? Maybe the Nachri are prohibited. So many the Akronim say that based on the Gemara in Chulin, as Aflam Gimel, Mika Lidi, there is no such thing that it should be more chomer for a Nachri than for a Jew. We have to observe the Shem Mitzvah ben Nech plus another bundle of mitzvahs, and even the Sheva mitzvahs ben Nerech Gufa, you have to observe in a more enhanced form than the Nochem have to observe it. How you talking? How can it be that they're not allowed to drink the milk because it's a Yoytzim min Ha'edom and Ahai? The Goyim are not allowed to drink milk, and the Jews are allowed to drink milk. It can't be that for us something is mutter, and for the Nochem it'll be awesome. Ikan midi d'lisol shari l'benoyachos. The Rambam doesn't pass Kamika Midi, so it's a kasha, but we usually assume like that Gemara Chulam Ika Midi, so that's what a lot of poskim say. So then the poskim raise a question, what if you have Chola Behemoth Meyo? Let's say you milk a pig. So we're not allowed to drink that milk. But we shouldn't be allowed to feed that milk to a non-Jew, because the only hetter that the non-Jews have to drink any milk in the world is because Mika Midi. But if for us it's us, then if we're not allowed to drink that milk, we don't have a heter because it's yotam and aser, so the bnei nerech should be aser also. So there's a whole literature on this. Are you permitted to feed cholav behema treifa, cholav behema tmeo to a non-Jew? There's no mika midi, maybe. There is mika midi, hold this stuff. That's a shach. So Rav Lezer Shach writes in his sefer on the Rambam, usually he doesn't get involved in anything that's negeh halacha ma'aseh, he usually has biurim. But over here he gets involved in this issue. He thinks the whole discussion is based on a mistake. He says, "Lo miboy l'shitas haRambam, that one who eats a yotzei min osav is ein aloike. It's a separate iser. It's not that the milk or the beitz of seif tomei is considered as if you're eating the behemoth tmei itself, as if you're eating the seif tomei itself and you get malchus." He says, "Lo miboy l'shitas haRambam, that is only an iser esei. So the whole prohibition of yotzei min osav doesn't apply to bnei noach. But Noach is not allowed to eat Eivim and Achai, but you're going to tell me he's not allowed to have a Yotzei Mina Eivim and Achai. Not allowed to, it's a Shiloh drinking milk for Ben Noach, because the milk comes from Eivim and Achai, the way Rashi learns the Gemara. He says, lo miboy l'shitas haRambam, there's no problem. He thinks that even according to Tosfos, who thinks that you get Malkus, it also doesn't make sense. He says he thinks that all the Achrayim missed the boat. He thinks it doesn't make any sense. What's the whole discussion in the first place? You don't have to command to the Meikah Midi Gemara to allow the Nochrim to drink the milk. There's no issue of Yotzei Min Osav by Bnei Noach. That's what he tines in his say. It's a separate issue and it doesn't apply to the Bnei Noach. Parsha continues to discuss the Tumim. A behemoth tomato you can't shech. The behemoth Torah lends itself to shechita. So if you shech the behemoth Torah, so it doesn't have a tumas nevela. If it dies a natural death, the behemoth Torah will have a tumas nevela. A pig or an elephant, even if you shech it, it's not chala shechita. So it's always going to have a tumas nevela. So the Chumash goes into details of the tumah, and then it says when it has tumah, then it lost them loisi go. You're not allowed to touch the nevela. So Rashi quotes the kasha from the Braisa in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and it's a Braisa in the Torah's kind of, what do you mean b'nevlasim loisigo? Even Kohanim who are prohibited from coming in contact with Tumas Meis Adam, that's only Meis Adam, but a dead master Kohen is permitted to come in contact with. That's the Pashup Shat in the most of the Rishonim and most of the Gadim assume like that. That's the Pashup Shat in this Torah's Kohanim in the Braisa, that a Kohen is only forbidden to come in contact with Tumas Meis Adam. The Tumas Nivlas Behemo is permissible, so the Gemara asked Akasha, what do you mean Binivlas and Losi go? It doesn't even go on Kohanim. Even Kohanim are permitted to. How can they say Binivlas and Losi go? So the Gemara says, it goes Beregel. On the Sholosh Regalim, Chayibad and Mataratzma Beregel. Everybody has to go to Mikveh before Regel, and you're not allowed to come in contact with a Dova Hamitamei Beregel. That's why many people still have the practice to go to Mikveh before Sholosh Regalim. Chayvonim Tarasma Beregel. On the last page in the fifth volume of the Mishnah Brura, when he's talking about Hilchas Yontif, so the Shari Tshuva next to the Behetu quotes, he refers you to the Shuva Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh discusses whether this Chayvonim Tarasma Beregel still applies to Bizman Hazeh. So he quotes a Rosh, the last paragraph in Yuma. The Rosh quotes Rabbeinu Sadigoyen that on Erev Yom Kippur everybody has to go to mikveh, and one should recite a bracha shekadoshana b'mitzvah v'tzivanu ala tfila when you go to the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. So the Rosh is very unhappy about that. He thinks that chai bottom of taratzma beregel doesn't apply, and the bracha will be a bracha lebatol. So the Shagas Aryeh discusses this topic, chai bottom taratzma beregel. So he says the Rambam writes chai bottom taratzma beregel only bizman shebeis hamigdash hayakayam, when they were able and obligated to be oiler regel to walk, enter into the azara. So of course you have to chai bottom taratzma beregel to be able to enter the azara, and it only applies to shalosh regalim. Never applied to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Avsadi Goyen applies chai bottom taratzma beregel to Yom Kippur. The chalav doesn't make any sense. He said the Shagzai claims it only applies bizman shebeis hamigdash hayakayam on the shalosh regalim to those who are mechuyev to be oiler regel. So of course, chai bottom taratzma beregel. But obviously others disagree. Others hold that it even applies to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it even applies bizman hazeh. So they assume it's not a function of the mitzvah of aliyah leregel. It's a different word. So if Yosef Engel quotes in the Gilyonei HaShas on Maseches Chagiga, on the third parak in Chagiga, he quotes that some write in Kabbalah Svarim that chai bottom taratzma beregel is in order to be able to absorb the hashpah from the kedushas haregel. Sounds like Kabbalistic terminology. You know, every person who experiences a Shabbos or a Yontif walks away with something. Not just that you did your mitzvahs, it makes you into a different person. So if the person will go to the mikveh before regel, he will be able to absorb more from the kedushas haregel. So Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes that there are those who write in their Kabbalah writings that this is only relevant, so therefore it could even apply bizman hazeh. It's not only a function of knisa aliyah leregel, knisa lazara, it even applies bizman shein beis hamikdash kayam in order to absorb the maximum from the kedushas haregel. So there are those who write that this only applies to regel, does not apply to Shabbos, because Shabbos, the kedushas hayam, is so powerful, it'll leave the same hashpoah on the person if he's interested in being mushpah from Shabbos, whether he's in the state of tara or the state of tumah. Doesn't make a difference. Rabbi Yosef Engel taines against them that there's a Gemara fakir. But from the Gemara in the third paragraph in Chagiga, it would appear that even Kedushas HaShabbos, this concept does appear in the Gemara, that even Kedushas HaShabbos will be absorbed to a greater extent if the person will be in the state of Tahara rather than in the state of Tum. So that's why there are many Hasidim, that's why many people who have the practice of going to mikveh every Erev Shabbos and every Erev Yom. Some will go to mikveh every day. That's a different story. It has nothing to do with chai bottom taratzma beregel b'Shabbos to absorb the kedushas hayom. On a regular Thursday, there is no kedushas hayom. That's a different word, because the Tanoim, the Gemara says that one of the ten takanos of Ezra was that a balkeri is not allowed to daven, is not allowed to learn. Then the Gemara says in Brochus, in the end of the second parak, that in the later generation, that was Ezra made that takanos says. Then the Gemara says years later, centuries later, the Tanoim repealed the Gzera because they saw that it's too difficult to observe. And they repealed the Gzera and they said it's permissible to learn Torah even if the person is in a state of Balkeri. So there's a Machlokes HaRishonim where the Takana was only repealed vis-a-vis learning Torah or even with respect to davening. Because the Gemara only says that it was repealed with respect to learning Torah. Never says explicitly that it was repealed with respect to davening. So that's Machlokes the Rambam and the Raida. So the Rambam says it was totally repealed. Strictly speaking, a person may daven even though he hasn't gone to mikveh, but he writes in the Mishnah Torah, but the Rabbanu Shlom will testify on me, a strange comment, I always went to mikveh. He never missed going to mikveh. When he was a balkeri, he always went to mikveh in advance. And then, of course, the Mishnah discusses what did he accomplish? If his sheet is that takana was repealed, no more takana, so what are you being machma for? It's a question for the writer sheet. He holds he's wrong. There is no such thing. So the Kesh Mishnah discusses. He says, since there was right to make the Takana, Ezra's Takana was right, the only reason why the later Takana repealed it is because they saw that it was too difficult for the people to observe, so never really caught on fully. It wasn't Roy Batsi B'Chodom Lamed Boy, but really, it was a proper Takana to make, that the Rambam thinks that a Bal Nefesh Yachma Al Atzmo, that a Bal Nefesh should try to observe such a takana. Right, some say that the Rav Sadi Goin, the Or HaShulchan claims the Rav Sadi Goin's kavana that you say a brocha on the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur is not because Erev Yom Kippur is chayvam taratzma beregel, part of all regel. He only meant Erev Yom Kippur. He didn't mean Pesach Shavuos Sukkos, because Lepnei Hashem Petoru means you should go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. That's what the Or HaShulchan interprets in the Rav Sadi Goin. But the Rosh didn't take it like that. The Rosh understood the Rav Sadi Goin is saying that chayvam taratzma beregel even applies bizman hazeh. It even applies to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Why would it only have been repealed for davening or learning? If it was too hard, then it's too hard for both.
Right. The Gemara never says why it was. The Gemara never says that because Ein Reva Tzibi Yochel Olam. But Tesis claims like this. According to Tesis, you must assume everything was repealed. The Gemara says a different reason why. That the Tanoim and the later generations disagreed in principle with Ezra. They held that he was wrong. That he had no right to make the Takan at all because they were not Mekabim Tumah. Then there's room to say that they only disagreed on Divrei Torah and on davening. A person should be in a state of Torah in order to daven. Right. So that's a big machlekes la'alacha, whether this din, bin of los and los ago, applies bizman hazeh or not. But the chayvarim tarat mabregel is still in force. The Gemara in Kiddushin, in the end of the first parak, has an interesting comment that appears in the Chumash. It says, kol halech al gachon, a listing of the non-kosher animals, in the Tumas Amei, so it has the word Gachon spelled with a big Vav. So the Gemara says the Vav of Gachon is Emtza HaSefer, Emtza HaOisiyos in the Sefer Torah. They had a Masorah. They have a lot of Masoras printed on the side of the Tanakh. So the Gemara quotes this Masorah that the Vav of Gachon is the Emtza HaTeber. So if it's by us, it's not so. If you count all the letters, it's nowhere near the middle. So it's a problem. It's a big problem, major problem. But that's what the Gemara says. So then the Gemara has a suffix, is the Vav of Gachon the end of the first half of the Sefer Torah in Oisius, or is it the first letter in the second half? So the Gemara says they don't remember what the Masor is. So the Gemara says, Lysi Sefer Torah, take a Sefer Torah and start counting. So the Gemara says, Anan loy bikiyinun b'chaseris v'seiris. We are not baki, and the chaseris v'seiris, therefore we won't be able to count. What exactly does that mean? So the Ramor in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah understood it kipshuta, that our Sefer Torah are faulty. We sometimes have a mole where it should have been a chasav. We sometimes have a chasav where it should have been a mole. And maybe that explains why the Vav of Gachon is no longer b'emtza ha'osiyos, because we have moleim and chaserim where they don't belong. So therefore, the Ramor says, halacha l'maisa, based on this, therefore, if you have a mistake in a Sefer Torah in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah that you have a mole instead of a chas instead of a mole, so you're not motzi another Sefer Torah because of that mistake, because it could be that the Sefer Torah that you were learning from is really the kosher one, maybe the other one is the mistake. We never know whether we're coming or going on mole and chas. You never know which Sefer Torah is more kosher than which. That's what the Ramor writes. Many other poskim disagree with the Ramor. They say no, we have a masor, what's supposed to be mole, what's supposed to be chaser. So you should be moti another Sefer Torah based on a mole and a chasa. I but the Gemara said beferish anan loy bikinan bechaseris v'yiseris. So doesn't the Gemara say beferish what the Ramah said? So Rav Soloveitchik said over an interpretation in the Gemara in the name of his father. He said they had a masorah that the Vav of Gochan is emtza hatevus of the Sefer Torah. And apparently the masorah was that there's an even number of letters to the Sefer Torah, not an odd. It would have been an odd number. Maybe there's a third alternative. It's the middle. Who says the Vav is the last letter of the first half or the first letter of the second half? Let it be the middle letter of the Sefer Torah. So that's what the Pnei Yeshua asked Akasha. So the Pnei Yeshua says there's a Zohar on the last page in Shir HaShirim, I think. He says the last page in the Zohar Shir HaShirim that there is Shishim Riba Osias Latar. That's very difficult. There's nowhere near Shishim Riba Osias Latar. So many Pirushim have been written on this passage in the Zohar. Rav Reuven Margolius' edition of the Zohar, he quotes several interpretations. Probably collects all, I don't know. He collects quite a few suggestions how to make sense out of this Zohar. But anyway, Peshua doesn't go into the details, just quotes the Zohar, says that there's Shishim Riba Osias LaTorah, and then he quotes from the Sefer Mala, the Megala Amukas. Megala Amukas, Achsidim Lan, Megala Amukas. The Megala Amikus writes that the word Yisrael is a Rashi Tevis Yesh Shishim Riba Osios LaTorah. I think at this the night of the Siyum, I I think one of the speakers mentioned that the word Yisrael is a Rashi Teva says Yesh Shimi Ba'osias Later. That's the Megala Muk is based on this passage in the Zohar. So the Pnei Yeshua writes in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Aleph, wherever this Gemara is then. So he says that's why the Gemara knew for sure that it's the Vav of Gochan, it can't be a third possibility. Maybe it's the middle letter. No, because the Zohar had a tradition that the Shishim Bibosios, it's an odd number of letters. The Gemara was just Nesupik, whether the Vav is the last letter in the first half or the first letter in the second half. Okay? So the so Rav Moshe Soloveitchik suggests that how can you paskin against the Ramah if it's of the famous Gemara? Anan loy b'keinon, b'chaseris v'seris. He interpreted the Gemara differently. He said the Gemara had a Masora that the Vav of Gochan is Emtzah Sefer Torah. Part of the Masora was whether it's the end of the first half or the beginning of the second half, that part of the Masora was lost. So they said, well, let's take the Sefer Torah now, we'll count it up, and we will reconstruct the Masora. So the Gemara says, no, since the Masora has been lost, even if you'll reconstruct it, it won't be considered Masora. Let's say they have in the Chidon HaTanach, they ask all these funny questions. Where do you have five words in a row that start with an aleph? Omar, at the end of the first half or the beginning of the second half. But it'll be irrelevant. It'll no longer be considered part of the Masara. Masara has to be that it was transmitted from generation to generation. So if the transmission was broken, it was discontinued, there's no way to reconstruct the transmission. If you'll discover which it is, it'll be stopped. A fascinating piece of information, but it's no longer part of the Masara. So that raises another question. So what in the world are all of these Masoras all about? So what's the significance of saying that the Vav of Gochan is the Emtzah? I mean, it's not a Chikabah piece of information, not Stamah, believe it or not. So what does it mean, a Masora? It means that's a Chelik of Liman HaTorah. To say, oh, with this Masora, that the Vav of Gochan is the Emtzah HaTevos. Dorash Moshe is also the Emtzah HaTevos, that's Emtzah HaHosyos. I don't know. Chelik of Talmud Torah.